Hi, it's Paul Prydecker and Mike Morgan, Attitude Adjustment on EA Radio. It's our final segment today on Thursday. And Mike, we've had some good sessions so far, and I think this one will be excellent as well.
Take us away, Paul.
Let's do it. I'd like to introduce Mark Palm. And Mark Palm is with Samaritan Aviation. And Mark, I was reading about your organization a little bit on the web, and I see a little bit more information you've given me in this brochure. You do amazing things in Papua New Guinea, and can you tell us about your organization and how you're helping people?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. It's wonderful to be able to use airplanes to change a community, to change a village. And we do that in Papua New Guinea. We work with some Cessna 206 amphibious aircraft, and we fly into some of the most remote water areas in the world, serving 1.2 million people. In this one area that we're at, there's one hospital for 1.2 million people. And we serve on a 700-mile river. 300,000 of those people are 3 to 5 days away from the only hospital.
And you're essentially doing medical transport to get people the help they need.
Yeah, our focus area is evacuation flights. We do that 7 days a week. 40% of our flights are moms and babies. We have snake bites. We have malaria, tuberculosis. There's still tribal fighting over there as well. And so there's some trauma as well. And Papua New Guinea, you know, you think of most of the people in America don't even know where that is. And so just to give our listeners a background, it's north of Australia. The island of New Guinea is the second largest island in the world. Just half of that is Papua New Guinea. In this country, there's 820 languages. A fifth of the world's languages exist just on that half of the island. There's 12 million people. And 80% of those people live out in the remote areas with no running water, no electricity, and no access to health care or medical services.
So, Mark, why did you choose this part of the world in which to invest?
Yeah, Mike, I was over there as a 19-year-old in 1994 and living with the people in the village. And the goal for that trip was, how can I just see what these people live like and what are the challenges that they have? And as I sat and listened to them in the bush houses and ate the food that they made and swam in the ocean for my bath and all of those things, I kept hearing a common theme, and it was this lack of ability to get help when needed. And hearing stories of people dying, traveling 1 to 3 days away to the only hospital. And you see water areas in this area where we're at, the Sepik River, 700 miles long, the size of the Mississippi for comparison here in the U.S., and these people living there with no access or hope. And you hear these stories of moms traveling 2 days and then dying. Mom's traveling 2.5 days and then the baby dies on the way in. And we kept hearing story after story. And we just felt, I'm a Christian and we are a Christian organization. And I just felt, you know, this is where I feel like I'm supposed to invest my life. These are the people I'm supposed to serve. And that's why New Guinea, the need is great. I was just there 2 weeks ago. I was in the country for a little over 2 weeks. I flew 22 times, flew in 20 patients just in that time while I was there. And so there's no shortage of need. These people have no access or hope if we're not there. And it's been amazing to use airplanes to change a community, to change a village, and to offer access to people that will not have it if we're not there.
I flew medical transport for about a year in a Learjet that was modified for it. But I can't even imagine the challenges that you have. I mean, we had runways. We had access to communications. It was pretty easy, all things considered. What are some of the challenges you face when you're doing this?
Yeah, you know, seaplane flying in that part of the world, it's tropic, so high density altitude for start as a pilot. We're dealing with that about 3,800 feet, actually, and we're at sea level. So you get that high temperatures, high humidity. And your density altitude goes up. We have weather that comes up quickly. Imagine Florida in the summertime with the monsoonals. That's kind of every day over there. We have these rivers that we're landing on. They're fed by hundreds of inches of rain every year. And so the river will rise and fall dramatically, up to 20 feet in 3 or 4 days. So you can imagine a river that's 1,000 feet wide rising and falling that dramatically. We don't have docks over there. So every village that we land, and we serve 119 villages every year, every village is a new challenge. And it's not just a new challenge the first time you land there. It's a new challenge every time you land there. Mm-hmm. And trying to figure out where you can dock the plane where you don't damage it. You've got the currents, the winds, debris floating down. You've got fishing nets, villagers in their canoes that don't understand that the propeller is dangerous, and they're paddling out in front of the airplane. So, one of the things we do as a staff is our pilots all have to learn the language, the culture, And so you spend several months when you first move over there to make sure that you can communicate. Imagine landing on a river when you're relying on someone to hold the plane to help launch you, and you didn't know the language, and you got 50 villagers running at the airplane. It's a very exciting event when we show up, and so knowing the language and the culture is a big deal.
Yeah, talk a little bit about the equipment that you're flying and how you crew those.
Yeah, so we fly, all of our planes are Cessna 206s on amphibs. We have everything, 76 to 81 are kind of the year models. We have three in country over there now. One of them's actually here at the seaplane base this week, so if people want to come down and see that plane, it looks exactly like the ones over there, and it's set up just like that. So we typically, depending on the urgency of the flight, we'll have the pilot, the nurse. We always bring a caregiver from the village, because in this part of the world, the caregiver is the one that feeds the patient, that bathes the patient, that looks after the patient. And so then we have a stretcher in the airplane. We have oxygen. We have a medical bag. So depending if it's a snake bite, we'll bring anti-venom right to the side of the river and start giving that before we fly back. And really our goal, we're not super high tech on the, like what you had in the Learjet, you know, but our goal is to stabilize the patient long enough to get them in. And, you know, the original vision was for Samaritan Aviation was, can we turn a 1 to 3 to 4 day trip into that only hospital into a 1 hour flight? And the second part was, can we do that at no cost to these people out in these remote villages that don't have money on a way to pay for it? And this is our 17th year now in country with float planes. We haven't had to charge any patient any time, and it's amazing to see the supporters that we have here in the U.S. About 80% of our funding comes from individuals, foundations, churches, and then the other 20% comes from the Papua New Guinean government, who sees what we do, and they help support us through grants as well.
We've been speaking with Mark Palm of Samaritan Aviation, doing amazing work in Papua New Guinea. I was just about to ask this, but you sort of started to address it. How are you supported, and, you know, how can people help?
Yeah, I mean, airplanes are expensive. You know, those of us in the aviation and look around this airfield today, there's a lot of money here, and it's not cheap to fly airplanes, especially in a part of the world. We had to have our own maintenance facility now. We do all of our own maintenance, so you have to have parts on hand. We have to purchase the airplanes, keep them going. People have just jumped on board. You know, when I first started the organization in 2000 with a friend of mine, it was 10 years we went around the country telling people what we could do, what we thought these airplanes were capable of, how people were dying, and if we weren't there, they weren't going to live. But if we could get there with a plane, we could save their lives. And, you know, I had long hair at that time. I was a surfer from California, and we weren't getting million-dollar checks written to us very frequently, or if ever, actually. So it just took time telling people the story, and people just watched. They heard the passion. They could see we cared. And finally, 10 years later, I moved my wife, our 4, 5, 7-year-old kids, packed a float plane in a 40-foot container and shipped it over to the Capitol, put it together with a bag of tools. I'm an aircraft mechanic as well, and I flew it 500 miles in to the place that we operate today. And it's just been amazing to see the organization continue to grow. You know, it was my wife and I for 5 years. I was flying, fixing. She was driving the ambulance, giving me the weather reports because there's no weather over there. And it's just that team effort is our family. And then to serving the patients. After we bring them in, we go in and we feed them, we clothe them, we pray with them, and just love on them. And that's a big part of what we do.
But before you, was it getting medical care by canoe or boat? Or what was it before you?
Before us, it was 1 to 3 days, you know. And so, you know, I always look at an organization or someone. If you look at your life or your organization, you say, are we making an impact? And the question is, what happens if you're not there? That's the question I always ask. And in New Guinea, if we're not there, people are dying.
So there's got to be a parallel need for things like logistics and transportation that enable things that patients need on both ends. Do you get asked to do that in addition to the humanitarian work that you're doing, or are there other organizations there that handle that?
Well, we're the only seaplanes in this region of the country. Mm. And so for us, you know, we take nurses out to places. We bring nurses in. There's some of that go on. We'll respond with medical supplies, doctor teams. If there's a medical sickness outbreak, if there's a flood, we'll go in with the government and do surveys and try to figure out how the impact is. Last year we had a 40-year flood and a 40-year earthquake all in the same 1 month, and so that was a tough time. So we were able to get in and kind of figure out what the villagers were struggling with. But as a rule, we just don't. You know, once you open up that door of just flying passengers. We operate as a private operations over there, so we're not able to actually legally receive funding. And so if you start flying villagers for free, it won't be long before your people are fighting to get on the airplane. And so they all know it's a medical plane. We do medical service. And so we have to stick to that to make sure we're able to also not, for me, I don't want to get sidetracked, you know, carrying people for or cargo for money or whatever. I want to be able to have that plane ready when the emergency call comes in.
You're focused on your mission.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if we have people here visiting you this week who are inspired by your mission and your ministry, what should they do if they want to become more knowledgeable and maybe look at that as a place that they might spend part of their life?
Yeah, I'd love to have you look up at SamaritanAviation.org, our website. You can also go to Facebook, Instagram at Samaritan Aviation, and you can see exactly what's going on. We have stories of lives saved, lives changed every day on our social media. And also, go down to the seaplane base. We have our staff. Some of them have just returned from Papua New Guinea with their families are down there. We have a tent. We have merchandise that we're selling. And we have the airplane right there that you can go put your hands on. Your kids can climb inside, look at the stretcher, and really visualize how we're using aviation to change the world in that part of the world.
Mark, you do an amazing work, and it's an inspiration to know, you know, the sacrifices that you've made to help people. You know, thank you so much. We've been speaking with Mark Palm of Samaritan Aviation, working on humanitarian relief in Papua New Guinea. This is Attitude Adjustment on EAA Radio.